Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you all hear me? Seems like this room is absorbing all the sound. Thank you, Cahal, for extending this invitation to Jelani, and welcome everybody. I have been given the subject today to talk about dominion, since all of the series of tapes that Cahal was playing were all on dominion for the past couple of months. She was asking if this could be kind of a bit of a recap, or just talking about my take or my sense of dominion. What I remember, we were gone for a lot of the series on dominion, but when we were back, the one thing I remember that stands out, it was either last week or the week before, Joel was saying it's dominion, not domination. There's a big difference between those two ideas. And the idea of dominion goes back to Genesis, where in the beginning, at the time of creation, when mankind, men and women, were created in God's image and likeness, they were given dominion over all of creation, the fish in the sea, the beasts, the birds, the plants, all of the earth. So they weren't given domination. They were given dominion. And dominion has a very interesting root to the word. It is something that happens by the grace of God. There is a spiritual hierarchy, and that spiritual hierarchy flows from that one infinite being, that one presence through creation as an expression of that one. So to understand and to experience oneness, it's helpful to understand the spiritual hierarchy, because in our material concepts of the world, it's very hard to say, okay, I'm one. I can't feel oneness on a physical level, because oneness isn't physical. Oneness is spiritual. Oneness doesn't have anything to do with the appearance world. It has to do with our relationship to spiritual reality, to spiritual creation. So when that was put in Genesis, that gave mankind an indication of the spiritual nature of life, the spiritual nature of creation, and the relationship that we have with it and that it has with itself. That first chapter of Genesis was attributed to second Isaiah, which means it was probably written around 500 or so BC. It was written at the time when the Hebrews were under the captivity or being controlled by the Persian Empire. And the idea of kingdoms, the idea of empires, the idea of republics, all of those ideas were known. So when Isaiah was talking about giving man dominion, he was setting the stage for this idea of the kingdom of heaven. Not a republic of heaven, not of the empire of heaven, not the democracy of heaven, but the kingdom of heaven. So you have a structure that has come down to us in its physical representation, where the Christian kings and queens of Europe were all given dominion over their people. They became sovereigns by the grace of God. No king or queen of Europe was ever crowned well, maybe Napoleon, but most of them that had a certain sense of legitimacy were always anointed with oil by a priest, meaning that this was a gift of God and they were to serve in this high office as sovereign, as a representative of the dominion of spirit over the material world. Now, people who live in a kingdom are not citizens. They're subjects. They're subjects under the sovereign. And the sovereign has dominion over all of his or her subjects. That is the most graphic way to look at the presentation of, in a material reflection of what is taking place in the spiritual realm. There is a sovereign. That sovereign is the only, really, that is the only dominion. That sovereign is the only activity, the only being that has dominion. The subjects of a king or a queen, they don't have dominion. They're under the control. They're of the sovereign. We, as spiritual beings, when we recognize the dominion of spirit, come under the control of spirit. That was another one of the definitions of dominion, is that which has control. Now, if we look at control from a ego base, we're looking at domination. We're not at all entertaining the idea of dominion. For us to have dominion, it requires that we step out of the conceptual world, step out of this world, and find my kingdom. Because my kingdom is where this spiritual structure exists. We have, well, let me move to this. The foundation of spiritual living, spiritual revelation, is oneness. So if there is no oneness in the material sense, how do we then affect our daily lives with this realization of oneness? It is because the activity of spirit is the activity that is the dominant activity of life. It might not appear that way in our material perspective, but the moment that we begin to get a glimpse of the relationship we have with God, the relationship we have with spiritual being, we start to see that this relationship is a relationship of oneness. In spiritual creation, God has made all that is made, and it is declared good. There is nothing that is not good in the spiritual realm. There is no discord. There is no conflict. There is no suffering. There is no evil. All of these aspects are based on human judgment. All of these aspects of material life are based on a misconception of spiritual reality. They are based on judgment. When the first chapter of Genesis was brought into awareness to the people, it clarified what had been the legend of creation, the legend of Adam and Eve. It took creation out of a material concept and made creation spiritual. In one sense, it caused a lot of problems, because now you had a conflict between, well, what did God really do? And that that spiritual revelation of creation could not exist with the material concept of revelation. So when the Bible was constructed back in the Hebrew times, they put this spiritual revelation first because they thought, okay, this is the basis of what the nature of life is dependent upon. It's not dependent upon the legend of Adam and Eve. It's not dependent upon the pain and suffering of human evolution. No, the nature of life, the reality of life, is subject unto spiritual law. It's subject unto spiritual reality. And spiritual law and spiritual reality is one. And so in the ancient times, we had two great prayers of oneness. One was, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Basically, if you think of God as power, as the primary force which controls the universe, and so if you have a primary force, a sovereign, controlling the universe, you have this sense of dominion. Well, if that is spiritual, then everything that is emanating from that source, from that is controlled by that sovereign, must be good, because creation is all good. So then you have another conflict. And why is there evil? How come evil is in this world? Well, evil is dependent upon the accepting of the legend of Adam and Eve. And what is evil? What constituted evil? Evil was depicted as knowledge, the knowledge of the pairs of opposites, the knowledge that there something can benefit you and something can harm you. And that knowledge was an evolutionary process through human judgment. We know that today, that the conditioned mind, human judgment, has created the structure, the physical structure in which we live. That physical structure has changed. Our bodies have changed. Our environment has changed. The whole physical structure of the world has changed as mankind has become more aware, or there have been those living who have been more aware that the physical structure of life is not true. It does not have dominion. It might dominate aspects of our lives, but it doesn't have dominion over us. The only thing that has dominion over our life is God. And when we realize that God is one, and we understand that second prayer, or that second revelation that Moses had, I am that I am, then we realize that this oneness is individual being. It is the I that I am. Therefore, we move back into this sense of spiritual relationship, and we have the oneness of God, which is completeness, which is meaning there is no opposite. If you have, you can't have one and something else spiritually. There is only one. It is the only. If it is the only, then there is no other source. There is no other life. There is no other being than this one. Oh, so where does that put me? If there's no other life and no other source than this one, then I must be part of this one. I'm not just a collection of cells and memories and physicality. That doesn't really exist. That has no place in the hierarchy of spirit. In the early Christian churches, this hierarchy then was depicted as God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. We had a relationship, and this relationship was one. That Trinity was whole. It was complete. expression of God the Father was God the Child. God the appearance of itself in action. The action, the spirit of that one self appearing individually is the Holy Spirit, because it is that spirit that motivates, that animates, that fulfills itself individually. So we move into a sense of dominion by realizing our spiritual nature. We have no dominion from a material perspective. That just can't be. We might be very strong mentally, we might have a lot of connections and seem to have a lot of power, and so we can dominate a lot of people, or we can dominate situations, but that is a false sense of what dominion is about, because there is the control that takes place in dominion, where you have a sovereign in control. Having dominion is all spiritual. Human control, human cause and effect are impotent. They have no bearing spiritually. So the spiritual hierarchy that we belong to, you might even say it's a community, it's a nation, it's a kingdom, it's my kingdom. It's this kingdom, whereas we realize that though we are subjects under the dominion of the sovereign and the subjects is one. There is no sovereign and a subject if there is oneness. Now, when you come into the material sense, the way it is depicted in history, that there is the esoteric sense that there is one, that the king or queen is one with the people. If the king or queen becomes so removed from the people that there is no longer a oneness between the sovereign and the subjects, then that sovereign is eliminated. You have a revolution. You do not have that relationship that was spiritually based, that came into, in its purest sense, an idea that life on earth is governed and controlled spiritually. Now, that is the truth. What has evolved in human nature is that we realize it doesn't take someone outside our own being to have that control over ourself. It does not take anyone outside ourself to be in control of ourselves. Therefore, when we pray, we're not praying outside of ourselves. When we see a problem, that problem isn't outside of ourselves. When we see world situations that are full of conflict, that's not outside of ourselves. That's all within our own perspective. And when we take that perspective and consciously move it out from the material concepts of cause and effect into the dominion of spirit, we're resolving that conflict spiritually. There is nothing that we can do to affect the world out there. Choose ye who you're going to serve. Where are you going to live? Are you going to live in this world, or are you going to live in my kingdom? Now, the great teaching of the Master, the great teaching that Joel left us, is that we can be in the world, but not of the world. So this is our evolution physically, is that we have developed in consciousness an awareness that there is another dimension of life, and that dimension of life is the ultimate reality. Everything else is relative. And this has been an evolution in consciousness. At first, there were very few that would know this, and there was no means for this to be communicated. Then, as it was being more communicated, those that communicated were lifted up on pedestals and made as gods. And then they were either put aside or put out there, or if they were like Saint Teresa of Avila, they were locked up in a cell because the authorities did not know how to deal with someone so attuned with their spirituality that they could defy gravity, that they could live in this spiritual consciousness. Now, we're coming into a point in the evolution of mankind to where the idea of a spiritual dimension of life experienced by individuals is not outrageous. It's not bizarre. We have quantum physicists who are explaining that there is another level of existence that we are totally unaware of, but without this level of existence, life would not exist. Spiritually, we have become aware of the nature of mind. The mind and meditation and mindfulness, being aware of your mind, is being taken out of any religious context. Meditation no longer is something that is practiced by Asian religions, by the Buddhists or the Hindus. Meditation is now a practice that is secular, and it is a practice that is seen and has been examined to benefit the well-being, the peace and harmony of the individual, not only mentally, but physically. 2 years ago or 3 years ago when we were in Australia, there was a big article in the Sydney newspaper about how mindful meditation was assisting in the healing of diseases. And it was being done by the medical profession because they differentiated the levels of meditation. They were saying you can meditate for relaxation. You can go to a spa. You can have the music play. You can get very calm and very peaceful, and you will have a very relaxing time. But that wasn't very effective for your physical well-being, other than you're relaxed and you'd feel good. But they said there's another meditation where you become very mindful of your thoughts, very mindful of your beliefs, your prejudices. This meditation, and this was in the newspapers, that is taught by becoming aware of the spaces between your thoughts. Now, this is what Joel taught 50 years ago. Become aware of the spaces between your thoughts, and as you become more mindful of those spaces, of that silence between your thoughts, it changes the dynamics, it changes the chemistry in your body. It takes your body out of being subject unto what we would term world belief, and it brings your body into the presence of this deep silence. Now, this was used in the paper, this deep silence. When in the presence of this deep silence, the doctors found that ailments, that diseases dissolved. They didn't know how, they didn't know why, but they knew that in this, if someone could reach this deep silence and they were suffering a physical claim, that physical claim would dissolve. It would go away. Now, they're at the very beginning. They've taken the first step of opening the door on a secular realm to realizing that life is not material. Now, we say life is spiritual because we have this awareness of this universal sense of oneness. And in our tradition, we use the word God. We use the word consciousness. We understand this because of the mystics of the past who always have, were able to give us an inkling of what the mystical nature of life was, put it in religious terms, whether it was the Eastern religious terms or Western religious terms. But really, oneness isn't religious. Oneness is a fact of the universe. The substance of the universe is one. Now, whether you call that one substance God, or whether you call it consciousness, or whether you put some other name to it, that one substance is what exists. Now, that one substance is all good. There is no evil in that. Evil is a judgment. Everything in this one substance manifesting itself is expressing its highest good. It's expressing love. The universe exists in love. And that love is reflected down to every level, every aspect of human life, of material life. Everything revolves around love. If there was no love, there would be no multiplication. There would be no cooperation. There would be no species if there wasn't love, because it is love that keeps regenerating so that this expression, this infinite expression of life, this eternal expression of life, always has something taking place, always has an action, an activity. The activity of life is eternal. We will never be without an activity. We will never be without life. The activity of life is infinite. There are no restrictions to what this activity, how this activity appears. It is appearing in each one of us as a specific action, as a specific expression at this moment. But when we realize that specific expression at this moment is just part of the whole, and we come to realize that as we understand our relationship to truth, our spiritual relationship, then all material bonds and all material concepts are freed. We are no longer subject unto them. So our access to this spiritual kingdom, to my kingdom, is through a spiritual sense. We all have this sense. It's apparent we have five senses. We all know what our five physical senses are, but the spiritual sense that we all have is no different than a physical sense, other than we cannot physically grab hold of it. All of our senses go through our mind. What you see is processed through your mind. It's the physical always moves up to the mental. And the mental is that area where we start exercising dominion, where we have some control. Now, if we're unaware of that spiritual relationship, we don't have much control over our mental processes. Or if we are a student of metaphysics, we might say, well, I can use the mind, I, which we start to realize when we go through this process, is the one that has dominion. Now, I could use that mind as to dominate. And a lot of the metaphysical practices of healing was really domination. It was a bombardment of right thinking, of good thoughts, of holding in your mind the physical perfection and whatever was disagreeing or was discordant to that physical perfection would disappear. But that's not dominion. And when we come into the mystical aspect of living, we realize that we give up this mental domination for the dominion of the spirit. But to be in that consciousness of spiritual oneness, we have to understand how it is our mind works, so that this spiritual sense, when it starts going through the mind, is going through the purest, most unadulterated aspects so that what we experience is the truth, and it's not a concept of the truth. So think of your senses. Think of what you see. What happens when you see something? The most human and the most natural is that we make a judgment on something. Oh, that's a beautiful sunset. Oh, that's a gorgeous tree. Oh, that's a pretty ugly picture out there. I don't really want to see it. So what we are seeing really does not have any bearing to what is. What happens is that what we see comes into our mind and it is judged. It is either judged good or evil. Now, that judgment creates an environment, a world in which we live. We do that same thing with taste. We, you know, some things we like, some things we don't like. Taste is less important to us as a controller of our lives, perhaps, than our seeing, our perception, or our hearing, or our touching. But all of the physical senses that we have are all processed through the mind. And that processing through the mind gives those senses their power. Without this mental process, without the judgment, those physical senses have no power. When we are totally focused, our attention is on the physical senses, what we are experiencing, what we are feeling. Even our feelings, even our emotional feelings in a way are a sense, because it is through our reaction with others that instigates this emotional sense of hurt, of pain, or of joy, or of happiness. But all of these senses and these emotions are all put into this filter that we call the mind. And from that, we project our experience. Our experience really is an outpicturing of our state of consciousness. Now, this is not an indictment. If you're suffering from problems, don't think that, oh, I've caused these problems because of the state of my mind. But the state of your mind is conditioned universally. What the way you process, the way you react, and the way you judge is not individual. It is a communal act. It is an act that is within every culture, within every society, probably within every species. We have lots of birds that come around, and it's very interesting to watch the dynamics of the birds between the different species of birds and within the same species of birds. There is a constant dynamic of domination. Some birds dominate. The birds that dominate get more food. The birds that dominate seem to have more power. That is the picture of this world. Now, where is that taking place? Are birds naturally falling into this pattern of domination? Or is that idea, that concept of domination, something that is emanating from this human mind, from this conditioned mind that is a universal, it is a universal sense. Now, the mind, when our spiritual sense is activated, we become aware of the spiritual nature, we felt a sense of peace, we felt a sense of wonder, we have something that has instigated this sense in us, because all of our senses are stimulated. When we were children, we didn't have a very developed sense of taste. We would only probably eat one food. As children, we probably were not that sophisticated in our hearing. We couldn't hear beautiful harmonies and melodies. We wanted to hear something very simple and something very basic. As children, we were unaware of the subtleties of color. We knew all the primary colors, but when it came, if you look at children's paintings, there is no sense that you could make subtle colors. It's all black and white and red and yellow and blue. But as these senses are developed, then we become more and more refined. They become more and more subtle. The same thing with our spiritual sense. It begins with a feeling, an awareness. But that feeling and that awareness then goes into our mind, goes into our instrument through which we perceive the world. And to the degree that our meditations are taking us out of the realm of judgment, that are taking us into this deep silence, into this mindfulness where we are aware of what's going on in our mind, it starts revealing something to us. It starts revealing that there's a spiritual sense to this I. I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. I'm not a collection of beliefs and conditions. I am that sovereign, expressed individually, that has dominion, that has control over the expression that I am living. And that expression is infinite and universal. That expression has no judgment to it, has no human belief attached to it. When this is opened in us, we start finding that this world, that the conditions, the beliefs, and the judgments of this world start to fade away. It's not that we don't have them. They'll always be with us as long as we have a body and are moving around on this planet. But they no longer have power. They no longer control our behavior. They no longer control our reactions. So if a problem arises, rather than having the reaction of all of this collection of beliefs, we have that spiritual nature coming in that says, wait a minute, are you going to accept this as power? Or through our mindfulness, we are able to say, no, wait a minute, let's take a moment and stop. Let's not accept what is coming to us at face value. Let's bring whatever concept, whatever belief, whatever appearance that we are experiencing, let's bring that into consciousness. So what is consciousness? Consciousness is our total awareness. In Europe, when I speak, especially in Germany, I can't use consciousness and awareness. They don't have different words for that. It's one word. We have this, in English, this subtle variation where we can talk about being aware and being conscious as two different aspects of mindfulness, really. Mindfulness that takes us out of material concept into an experience of spiritual reality brings us into consciousness. We are then conscious. We're not just aware of this other dimension. We become consciously one with it. We are bringing this oneness, this universal oneness, into individual awareness. And we bring it then into our individual experience. I think we're always aware of this spiritual nature. It's been, as students of this message, we are always have that sense that I'm aware of the spiritual dimension, but I might not always be consciously part of it. It might not be part of my consciousness, even though I'm aware of it, because my attention has been pulled into some other area. And there's nothing wrong with that. We all live on multidimensional lives. our lives are not meant to be as as some people have a concept of being spiritual in a monastery or in a cell and totally alone without any contact, so that we can have this wonderful light coming down from above and filling our soul. That's a religious concept. And who says the light comes from above to fill our soul? Maybe the light comes from within our soul and fills the universe. So as we live life, which is what most all of the lessons of the Infinite Way, the teachings of the Infinite Way, is to live life in the world but not be subject unto the domination of the beliefs of this world. That is a huge practice. I mean, if somebody said, okay, here's going to be your job for the next 80 years, live in the world but don't be subject unto it. Okay, so where do we start? As with all spiritual messages, there is only one place to start. With I. With ourself. Who am I? What am I? Those are the important questions to ask. Because those questions can lead us into the awareness of our spiritual sense. Those questions can take us out of the material structure of life and bring into our experience the infinity of being, the infinity of this spiritual dimension. We've been given all the tools to be free. One of the tools that is part of this consciousness, the spiritual realization, is that my kingdom is complete, that creation does not evolve, that this universe that we perceive, even in our limited concept of the universe, is completely whole. Nothing can be added, nothing can be taken away. When the astrophysicists look at the galaxies and maybe at many, many universes, they're not sure, but that the idea of infinity is so vast that they basically are not so much trying to define it as to have some sense of our place in this vast expression of life. And if we, when we realize that the substance is the same, that the substance is one, the substance of life is one, and that life, that the universe, that creation is complete, then it takes away the idea that we can improve on things. And this is from a spiritual standpoint. You know, obviously in the material world, we're always trying to improve things. But spiritually, what this does, if we're dealing with problems, and we have the tendency to want to correct a wrong, to heal a disease, to change bad behavior, to bring out more abundance in our life, we are beginning with an erroneous premise. Whereas when we have the premise that spiritually everything is complete, and all I have to do is realize the wholeness and the fullness and the nowness of spirit, that's a tremendously different approach to looking at life, to want to experience the spiritual aspect of life, to want to experience the freedom of living from our soul. If the world is complete and time and space is an illusion, which Einstein said, time and space is relative to where you are, and it's relative to the spinning of the planets. If there are planets that revolve around a sun in 28 days rather than 365 days, people lived on that planet, their lifespans would be in the thousands of years rather than in the, you know, 80s or 90 years. It's all relative. What is constant? What is constant is the now. This moment, right now, is all that exists. This moment in this completed universe with our mindful awareness of the presence of one, we are totally united with all that exists, all good, all harmony, all abundance, all of it. There is nothing to be dealt with out there in the conceptual world, for that is all it is. It is a collection of beliefs, perceptions, concepts. But behind all of that, in consciousness, there is the fullness of life in all of its aspects. That becomes apparent to me as I rest in this peace. As I don't resist, Well, thank you. It's been a beautiful, beautiful presence, and it's been a pleasure to speak to you this morning. Thank you.